Hello, I'm Patrick Adams.
And I am Caroline Legere.
And this is Librarians of Littles, a podcast where we review books, share makerspace ideas, and give tips and tricks for working with our youngest learners in the library setting. Today, we have two really fun books to share with you, the first of which is How to Make a Peanut Butter Sandwich in 17 Easy Steps. It's published by Owl Kids Books in 2023, and it's written and illustrated by Bambi Edlund. Some awards for Bambi Edlund. She received the Lane Anderson Award. She was a Lane Anderson Award finalist in 2024 and a Junior Library Guild Selection List 2024 for Operation Cupcake, How Simple Machines Work. And she is she's on the Texas 2x2 list for 2024 for How to Make a Peanut Butter Sandwich in 17 Easy Steps.
Bambi Edlund has written and illustrated Operation Cupcake, How Simple Machines Work, and Squirrel-ish. She is also the illustrator of What a Waste, Where Does Garbage Go? By Claire Emner.
So the summary for How to Make a Peanut Butter Sandwich in 17 Easy Steps is that there are wild animals attempting to make a peanut butter sandwich. They go through a very unique set of steps in the process of completing the sandwiches. This is a really fun story. I enjoyed it. It's these animals and getting into these really silly situations to complete the goal. I love that the book starts right away with a list of all the things that you'll need, and there are just some like a donkey, you need clogs, there's like oranges, and so like just starting by looking at all of those things with the students really gets their brains working right away. Like, what do you need oranges for to make a peanut butter sandwich, and why are you using clogs, and having a fun conversation and explaining what clogs are. All of these things. And then as the story goes through, you can have the students count the steps along with you and see what all of these items are being used for and some of the kind of crazy routes at which they go to get to the end goal. And then there's a lot of fun vocabulary words to include and kind of explain to students, because at one point the animals have to settle up with the people in the story, and so kind of explaining what that means, and like we said, clogs, because I don't think a lot of kids will know what a clog is. And so it was just a fun story. The pictures are amazing. They're very kind of lovable character designs, these cute animals doing some weird things to get to the end result of being able to eat a peanut butter sandwich. I really enjoyed it.
I loved this book too. It was really funny, very silly. I'm so glad you said that about the first page with all the different things that you'll need to make the peanut butter sandwich. That was easily my favorite part of the book. I love how, and you could really, you could do a really fun lesson on this with just using predictions. Like, you could make a copy of that first page so the kids can like keep it posted for the kids to see as you're reading through, and like kind of cross off what they've already used, and as you're going through, I would love to like cross it off and just like, okay, what's next, how could they use that, like what on earth would you use clogs for? And clogs are, for me, that's what stuck out the most. That was like
yeah.
I'm glad you mentioned that one in particular, too, because I was like, huh, what are we doing with clogs, people? Let's find out together. Like,
yeah, it was just so silly and fun and very creative in how they came to the process. So it was, So I would definitely give this a high score, because it is like, even though it's a relatively simple thing, you can also, you could also use this as a sequencing lesson for the kids. Like, you could like make like a picture of each of the steps and give the kids the pictures and have them put them in order and that kind of thing. There's a lot that can be used this book can be used for. And so I really enjoyed it. I'm thinking this one is one of those 5 out of 5 bookmark books because it's very, very good and very engaging. And I think it's a perfect kind of book for a read aloud with our younger students.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I was thinking 5 out of 5 as well. It's just that engaging. It's just super silly. And I think the kids will really engage with it very quickly. So absolutely. Excellent choice. Good work.
Yes, this was a great one. I'm glad that it is being recognized by the Texas 2x2 list because it is such just a fun book. Gets in that counting, that sequencing, that predictions, and then just the great pictures and the silliness of it. It's just a fun book.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we're going to do a makerspace activity, I was trying to decide what I would like to do with this. Like I said, you could do like a sequencing activity with this where they put the different steps in order. You could, there's a lot of different things, but I decided that since we're trying to feed animals, I thought it would be fun to make a bird feeder of some kind. So using either pine cones, or I've seen it done with toilet paper rolls, get some bird seed. You could use peanut butter or sun butter or even honey if there's an allergy. I also like the idea of using like those little plastic knives for students and have a conversation about safety first kind of thing, but have them be able to use those plastic knives and then just piece of string or yarn and have the students use those plastic knives to practice spreading the food adhesive, whatever you're going to use, peanut butter, sun butter, or the honey, onto either a pine cone or onto a toilet paper roll, and then rolling those things into the bird seed, and then you just tie a string or a piece of yarn to hang them, ideally hanging them outside near a window in the library, or if you're doing this in the classroom, outside your classroom, so that you can see the birds and that come to feed on the bird seed. That would be a pretty cool way to kind of introduce some of that natural, you know, be able to let the kids see some birds. And I think that would just be maybe a little messy, but it would be a fun activity to do. And then you can always send them home if you wanted to. You can put them in plastic bags, send them home, let the parents hang them in their trees in their homes, that kind of stuff too. But I think that would be fun. And I like the idea of having the kids use the plastic knives to be doing the spreading, because I think that's a skill that builds up some of the fine motor that some of the kids maybe haven't been able to practice before. So just something like that.
I love that idea. I really do. And I think I did this one in the classroom like a long time ago, like maybe 10 years ago. And I think we used Crisco when we did it.
Okay.
And Crisco worked pretty well and I think we did it for allergy reasons, because that's another one that not many people are allergic to that. I don't think anybody's allergic to Crisco, actually, now that I think about it. But I think we sent them home in plastic bags, but now that you're mentioning it, I just haven't really thought about doing it in the library. And I do actually really like the idea of doing that in the library. And I think I would probably, another way I might do it is like not necessarily do it as an individual like makerspace activity, but more of like an extension of like the story time lesson where like we're kind of all doing it together, or maybe like doing it in more of like a small group. Maybe like have 5 kids come to the table at once and we just make like 5 bird feeders with the whole class, and then the kids could like take turns spreading whatever on the toilet paper roll or pine cone, so that everybody kind of takes ownership, but then you don't have
25 of them.
I like that idea. And then I like hanging it outside the library. I think that's a really fun way to like, because honestly, when you do activities like that and send them home, I think there's maybe like a 50-50 chance that the parents will actually like hang it somewhere for the kids and like continue that extension. And then sometimes that can be really sad when the kids worked hard on something and then their grown-ups don't follow through at home. So I kind of like the idea of doing it like a smaller setting and then hanging it outside the library if you can, if you have windows, which I'm fortunate enough to have real big windows in both of my libraries right now. So
Well, and I gotta give credit where credit's due. I took that part of the idea from one of our coworkers, Miss Jenna. Her classroom, outside her classroom window, she has a bird feeder to get the birds to come. And so the kids, it's right at the kids' level too, so the kids could go over and watch the birds. So I thought if we're going to make a bird feeder, having it somewhere where the kids might be able to see it so they can see the birds that come would be great. So kind of piggybacking off of something that she does in her classroom that I've seen before. So
I love that.
Yeah. All right. So for this week's Library of Littles management tip, I thought we'd talk about picture schedules. So many of our friends are visual learners, which we've discussed quite recently. Even as adults, sometimes we need those visuals to help us. So you do a great job of using a picture schedule with your students so that they know what's going on and have the predictability of the lesson. So why don't you tell us about your picture schedule?
Yeah, so in both of my libraries, I have a story time puppet that I know we've talked about our story time song before, and we can refer back to our previous episode where we have our story time song listed for you guys. But we start with a story time song, and we always sing our song with our school mascot. So at one campus, it's a lion cub, and the other campus, it's a bear cub. So we start with the picture schedule with just a picture of the mascot. So the kids know, okay, I see a picture of our little puppet, our mascot, we're going to sing our story time song. The next step is always a picture of the book that we're going to read for the day. For that one, I just go to Google Images and do a Google image search, print that out, and I put that one right below the picture of the mascot so the kids can see, okay, the mascot's here, that's where we're going to sing, and then right below it is a picture of our book, that's the book we're going to read. And then below that, there's always a picture of our tables, because the kids, we have a story time rug where we sit for our story time, where they listen to the book and any whole group instruction that we have. And then after that, they go to our makerspace centers, and that's always at the tables that I have set up in the library. There's a total of 5 tables, and there's always a bucket of toys or makerspace manipulatives at each one, so the kids can kind of see where to go and the space is well defined. So for that one, I just have a picture of the tables where it's just empty, because the kids know that's where we're gonna go have our makerspace time, because that's where they do their makerspace. So our picture schedule always looks like mascot at the top, below that is the book, and then below that is the picture of the tables. And after that, I know I should probably have a visual of cleaning up, but at that point, like when the kids come into the library, we always sit down, we always look at our schedule, and we point out the things that we're going to do. But they don't really sit down again after the tables, so we never refer to it, because they're not sitting and looking at the schedule again. Like, we look at it the first time, but they don't, you know, like, I'll, like, refer to it as I'm going through my lesson for my whole group instruction. But then once they get to the tables, they don't see it again, so I don't really have a visual for cleanup, which maybe I should, just so they know it's coming, but I've also already taught them that that's part of our makerspace table time. So that's something you could add if you were so inclined. I just don't have it on my schedule in particular.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the picture schedules are so important. I have a similar schedule. Mine is more generic. I use a note of like a musical note, and that's our story time song. And then I have a generic picture of an open book that I use for the fact that we're going to read a book. And then I'll use that same, I have more than one, so I'll use a second music note symbol to say if we're going to do a dance or something like that. And then I have a picture of students building. That's for the makerspace activities. And so I use more generic clip art, just because I, printing out and having each book that we're going to read each week takes a little bit of forethought and planning that I am not always able to ensure that I have done. So using a generic, but as long as you've explained to the students in advance what each of the pictures represents, they're going to get the same out of it. They're going to be able to look at and know what's happening. And so, yeah, you can use specific pictures of like your puppet or of your book that you're going to use, but as long as there's some visual to give those kids being able to see, okay, we're here, we've done this, this is the next thing we're going to do, that's the purpose of the schedule. And it works so well for so many of our friends. A lot of these kids have, like, are anxious about what's going to come next, and so having that schedule to tell them what's coming so that that can kind of help them calm themselves and regulate, and just having that predictability makes it just, it runs so much smoother, and the kids feel so much more comfortable knowing in advance what's going to happen. That's why so many kids, even in elementary school, so many of them come to you as soon as they come into the library, what are we doing today? It's because they want to know. And so if you hold on a second, we'll go through exactly what we're going to do today kind of thing. It just helps with that anxiety. It helps with a lot of the behaviors because they know that they're going to be able to get up and do this, or going to be going to the tables to build that kind of thing. So it really helps with a lot of things, and a lot of the kids react positively to picture schedules. They're so useful.
It is. Yeah, I agree. It really, like you said, it helps calm their anxiety because they're, a lot of our kids, especially our younger learners, that those 3 and 4 year olds, like they, when they're dropped off at school, they don't really, like, they don't know what to expect because they've never done it before. And they, some of them, like, kind of panic a little bit. They think that, like, they've been abandoned forever. And if you have something like a picture schedule to kind of show them, okay, this is how long you're going to be in here, and you can go through the things. And, like, with my more anxious students, I do take down, you know, when we sing our picture, our story time song, I'll take off the picture of the mascot so they can see, okay, that's done and that's not coming back. And so they can kind of check things off their list and they know that there is an end point. I think that helps them a little bit. Yeah. You know what I've also started doing this year that I don't think I've told you about is, you're right, it is a lot of work to go through. It's not a lot of work to go through and find that Google images and print the picture, but it's kind of annoying, to be honest. And it is an extra step. And it doesn't take a ton of time, but it's a little bit of pain. So what I've done this year is I kind of created a display that kind of goes along with it. I made a new bulletin board in the library. Okay. I'll take a picture of it and I'll send it to you so we can post it. But at the very top of the display, it says books we've read so far. And then it has like twine underneath it, like 2 rows of twine.
Sure.
And we just, when we're done with our book for the week, we clothespin it over there. And then the kids can see all the books that they've read in the library all year long. And at this point, this is the first year I've done it. And I really like it because as soon as you walk in the library, it's like the first thing you see, it's like right next to our story time rug. So it's one of the first things you see when you walk in, and you can really get a good visual of like, wow, they've read like 90 books in the library so far this year. And like, I've gotten to now at this point, like the kids like go up to it now and they're like, I remember reading that one. And they'll like ask me like, oh, do you remember when we read Polar Express? It's up there. Like, and they'll like, not, it doesn't happen like daily, but at least once or twice a week, like I'll have kids come up to me and be like, hey, remember that one? Can we read that again? That was fun. So that's another thing that you could do with it is like, and that doesn't really create, that doesn't now doesn't create any extra work for me because that's just part of the picture schedule. It just moves over. And I don't forget what books I've read. That's exciting too, because I've been doing this so long that I'm like, I don't remember which ones. So that helps.
Yeah.
That helps me as well.
I love that idea. That would be worth it for me, is to print the book covers just so that you could have that display. That's really cool. Because, yeah, like you said, that'd be really awesome to be able to see how many books you've read with the students. It would be really cool for them to be able to go back and look at them. And then, yeah, once you start doing it, the years start running together. So you're like, have I read that book with this group yet?
Sure.
So having that to help you, that's awesome. I love that idea. I'm gonna have to do that. Okay.
Yeah, I'll send you pictures this week.
Yes, thank you. That would be great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we'll add that in our show notes for this episode so everyone can see them. But no, that's, I love that idea. Now it's one more thing I'm gonna have to do in the library. Okay.
Oh no.
That's okay. This will be a good one though. This is nice. Because then just like, not that it matters, but added bonus that if any administrator ever comes into the library it's a quick, easy thing to be like, look, this is all the stuff we've done so far. They don't even have to talk to you. They can just see it and then...
Yeah, that's another example of how visuals work real well for grown-ups. We need them. We all need them.
I love that.
All right, the next book we have for you guys today is How to Count to One and Don't Even Think About Bigger Numbers. The publisher is Nosy Crow, Inc., published in 2022. The author is Casper Salmon and the illustrator is Matt Hunt. This book is on the 2024 Texas 2x2 list and the District of Columbia Capital Choices 2024 list for books for ages birth to five. Casper Salmon grew up in France and he is currently a freelance writer and lives in North London with his two children. He does not have any other children's books, but he is, like I said, a freelance writer, so he has published many articles and other pieces of writing for adults.
And the illustrator, Matt Hunt, currently lives in Redditch, UK. He holds a BA in Fine Arts from Birmingham School of Art. And some of his other books include... A First Book of Dinosaurs by Simon Mole, Little People, Big Dreams, King Charles by Maria Isabel Sanchez Vergara, The Cat and the Rat and the Hat by M. Linus, The Goat and the Stoat and the Boat by M. Linus, and The Pirates Are Coming by John Condon. And he wrote and illustrated the book Up High.
And in this book, an unseen narrator tells the reader that they're going to try a new way of counting in a new kind of book. And on each page, the narrator repeatedly asks the readers to count to one. However, the number of items pictured grows with each turn of the page. I thought this was a really cute book. It was a really funny twist on counting books. As you turn the page, the first page, the kids just have to count, you know, one apple. And then it tells you, we're going to count something bigger now. And then you turn the page and it's literally bigger and it's just one elephant. And then after that, it's like, it says, okay, you have to go find something else now. And it has pictured as like really two huge whales. So naturally that's where your eyes go. But then there's a tiny little sausage up in the spout of the whale. And it tells you to count the one tiny little sausage. So like the kids have to, the narrator tells you to, you know, count the one and then has ellipses, sausage. And so, like, the kids are already focused, like, visually on the whales, but then naturally you have to count the sausage. And it keeps kind of going on like that. So I love that it was, like, the kids, like, really, really have to listen and follow directions in this book. Because they're gonna naturally, like, just the way it's written, they're intended to, like, look at all the different things on the page. But they're going to have to, like, really tune in and listen to, like, what they're supposed to be counting. And, like, it repeatedly tells you, it's only going to be one. But we know those kids, they're going to be tricked. So I love, and on the back of the book, there's also a QR code that takes readers to an audio version of the book. And that was, I gave that one a listen. And that was actually a pretty, I would still rather, like, as a librarian, read it. But if I was reading this at home, or if I had this at home with my kids, I would probably, like, read it and then, you know, play the QR, scan the QR code and listen to the audio and kind of go back and forth. Because there are, like, audio cues and, like, on the page with the whales, like, you hear splashing and things like that. So kind of that might be a good way, especially for, like, for parents reading this at home with their kids to kind of get kids to cue in. Because it can be difficult to be an engaging reader sometimes. For younger children, so that might be a good way for others to read it as well. So, yeah, I really liked this book. It was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I enjoyed this. It was very cute, and just the different ways that they were able to kind of make you focus on just the one of everything, because as the numbers of items on the page get bigger and there's more and more things, and it's still just looking for one specific thing every time. It was cute and clever and kind of silly at times. I think this is definitely a very engaging book for our readers. I think that, like you said, definitely so they're going to get tricked and they're going to count more than one on a lot of the pages, but it's a fun book. And I think that a lot of those kids, especially the ones that are really bright and can count pretty high already, are going to find it amusing in the end. And then at the very, very end, there is the 100 things that they can count and everything. So, I really like this book. It was a good one. It was a good choice.
Yeah, it was fun. It was kind of a Where's Waldo, I guess, of counting books. So
Yeah.
I think I would probably give it a 5 out of 5. I think for
I
like a
think so.
read aloud in the library, it's really engaging because you have to really make the kids listen to what you're saying. Because sometimes they kind of zone out a little bit and sometimes they'll just pay attention to the pictures. And like that's a good pre-reading skill. Looking at the pictures and just focusing on that is a good pre-reading skill. That is what comes first. But we have to listen and pay attention. So I think like for a whole group, it's a lot of fun. I would give it a 5 out of 5. And even like listening to it at home too, because it's got that QR code. Like if I was just recommending it for like a parent to read with their child, I would still give it a 5 out of 5 because that too.
Yeah, I think it's a great one. I think you're right. 5 out of 5 for it.
Like you were saying at the very, very last page, it finally does let you count 100 things and you get to count to a higher number than one. So I think I would use this for a 100th day or close to a 100th day activity. I think that might be a fun way to like just tell the kids, okay, it's time to celebrate the 100th day and then can't pet count past one. Ha ha. But then surprise, we really are going to count to 100. Yeah, I think that this would be a great one for the 100th day. So I think really, any kind of 100 activities would work, like for makerspace. A more unique one might be like building a 100 domino dash with kids and like creating a chain reaction using 100 dominoes. But really, 100 of anything could work because it is at the very end, it's just 100. So, whatever your favorite 100th day activity is could tie in with this really easily.
That's great. Yeah, I love this book. And I think for sure you're right. 100 dominoes or give them 100 Legos to build with, any of those things would absolutely be great for this book. Very engaging. And some of those kids just love to count. So give them 100 and let them count that out and then have them build with it or set up the dominoes or whatever. That would be great. I love that idea. And I think that I'm going to try this next year on the 100th day. We're already past it this year for me, but I think that this would be a really fun book. You're right, for the 100th day, especially when it starts out just kind of tricking them all to only be counting to one for the first for the
Forever.
beginning of the book. Yeah, for the whole book until the last
Except the
page.
last page.
Yeah. So I think that would be very funny and a lot of fun.
You could maybe do it for April Fool's Day too.
Oh,
Like,
there you
surprise, tricked you. We're counting.
go.
Now you have to work.
There you go. That's actually a really good idea. Yeah. Awesome.
Thank you all for joining us today on this episode of Librarians of Littles. We hope you found some fresh ideas for inspiring young readers. Please be sure to subscribe and connect with us on social media.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Librarians of Littles. We hope that you've enjoyed it. Check back each Wednesday for a new episode. Librarians of Littles is a podcast produced and hosted by Patrick Adams and Caroline Legere. Editor, Patrick Adams. Our theme song is performed by JD Adams. You can follow us on Instagram at Librarians of Littles. You can follow us on Blue Sky at littleslibrarian.bsky.social. And you can send us your emails at librarianoflittlespod@gmail.com. I liked the book that you picked for this one too. That was a really cute. The How to Count to One was a lot of fun. I like this book.
It was a lot of fun. It
And it.
was really hard finding information about the author because apparently he's
Yes.
like really into only adult things and stuff. And I was like, whoa, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was really cute. I enjoyed it.